With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Will Melody Hobson's $1.45 billion Project Black Fund, which plans to minoritize existing businesses, help to narrow the wealth gap? Spotify invested less than 10% of the $100 million it pledged to its creator equity fund during the Joe Rogan controversy, and it doesn't appear it ever took the pledge seriously from the beginning. Things just keep getting worse for Twitter as a social media giant issued a copyright takedown notice to GitHub after finding out parts of its source code had been posted online for months. And Congress seems to be unified and serious about banning TikTok in the United States. We got all this and more for you in episode 76 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
Oh, now I got the giggles. Coming out of Philly, it's your Tech Lifestyle.
Let's just stop.
Out of Atlanta.
Let's just stop.
We got it. So, and out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. I don't know how we're gonna get through this episode with these two rascals over here.
Yeah.
I'm saying you gotta keep that in there. Keep it real. Keep it authentic.
Listeners, Tech Light Steph is over here tripping. We done tried to start the show three times.
My bad.
And she's the one's like, yeah, I'm ready to go. And then she start. It's kind of like Will Smith in the original Men in Black when he was pulling the table across the chair when he was taking the test. You pulling your microphone across the desk.
I didn't think it was that loud.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah. So how y'all doing this week?
Doing good, man. Can't complain. Got a lot of stuff going on in the next couple of weeks. Personally, I'm going to be up and down almost down to Florida next week and then back up to Indiana the week after that. And then, well, actually, I take it back. This Friday, I got to take my daughter to a competition in Tennessee. And then that's on Saturday. And then on Monday,
competition for
she is a color guard.
Okay.
Yeah. Better word for flag girls. Because there's some guys that do the flag stuff too, so they call them color guard, right? So I'm doing that this coming Friday, Saturday, this coming Saturday, up to Tennessee, back down to Atlanta, and then on Monday, heading down to Florida for our kids' spring break. So we're going to Florida for a couple days, and then coming back to Atlanta on Friday, just in enough time to hop on the airplane and fly up to Indiana for a couple of days. And then the week after that is me and my wife's anniversary. So we had to put that on hold because the weekend after that, our kid's going to our final competition in Ohio. So busy next couple of weeks.
You just running man all over the place. Clearly you already had your plans in place because did y'all see where I believe is the NAACP has put out a travel advisory for Florida, basically telling black folks you don't need to be going to Florida, right, Spending your money there.
Oh, I haven't seen this.
I just heard this on the news today, and it's not in our rundown, but you just said you was going to Florida and it just made me think of it. And I'm like, you know, cause we talk about it all the time. They wilding out down there, but
just in general.
Yeah.
But,
I should have, if I would have heeded that, we probably would have went someplace else.
Like, so you already had the plans in place. So, you know, this literally came out, or I should say I saw it today. So
It says one local business owner believes more people should move to Jacksonville instead and bring more black owned businesses. Cause of DeSantis, right? That all the shit he's doing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Stay up out of Florida.
Yeah.
Can't mess around.
But y'all, let's go ahead and do a tech show and get into some of these tech stories. But before we do, just got to let folks know, if you would like to become a patron of the Tech John, if you'd like to help support the show, head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn, where we've got multiple tiers over there, any one of which gets you access to our live stream and after party. So once again, if you're interested in helping to support the show, head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. And with that, Stephanie, let's jump into this first story, because this one essentially is about Melody Hobson. I've been a fan of hers for years.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, she basically has come up with a way to support. I want to let you dive into the nitty gritty of it, but it's like, is this supporting of black owned businesses, or is this turning businesses black owned? It's like, or black run. So
it's real all up in there. Melody Hobson, who we should all know, if you don't know, is like that girl, married to George Lucas, like billionaire in her own right, part owner of the Denver Broncos. And she is the co-CEO and president of Ariel Investments, which is the largest, black owned private equity fund, in the country and probably in the world, actually. Mm-hmm. She has this project. The only reason I put this in there, it stood out to me because we had an episode, maybe one or two episodes back, where I fussed about the fact that, Andreessen or somebody had this little $40 million fund for startups, and how it was just this drop in a bucket, you know, versus the billions of dollars that these companies, you know, these venture capital companies and these equity funds are putting into other companies. And the number stood out to me on this, because she was able to, through a bunch of different partners along with Ariel Investments, get $1.45 billion committed to what they are calling Project Black. And what Project Black is, I mean, I guess, you know, what it sounds like to me ultimately is she's trying to change things from the inside. Mm-hmm. That's what it kind of sounds like to me. Cause what they plan to do is acquire companies that have between $100 million and $1 billion in revenue, minoritize those companies. And that's her word.
That's a new term.
Word she came up with. There's a video from Forbes that she's in that she says minoritize these companies by basically, you know, cleaning house and bringing a whole bunch of black and brown folks into the C-suite, and then hoping, I guess, or I don't know if they'll be contractually obligated at that point to either acquire smaller minority owned businesses, so that now these companies can scale up and be suppliers for large corporations like the Walmarts and things of the world, or use minority owned suppliers, and diverse suppliers for their own business, these companies that they gobble up. So I was kind of like, I mean, I get it. Like I said, it sounds like some spook who sat by the door type-ish. If you're familiar with the Sam Greenlee book, one of my favorite books ever, it sounds like that type of sort of, you know, quasi-subversive, let's get them on their own territory, you know, beat them at their own game kind of thing. But, you know, I my eyebrow went up, because it's kind of like, is this actually going to help black business? Or is it just going to help a few C-suite executives that get good jobs? And then some black businesses get gobbled up in the process. I kind of get it, but then there were some things that just didn't set well with me with the whole project.
So here's my take on this. So, just to bring some of our listeners up on game on how a lot of this private equity works. We often see these medium sized businesses. And like I said, we think of small businesses as three people. Small businesses literally could be $100 million, right. Endeavor, with hundreds of employees. And when you get into medium sized businesses, you're now talking hundreds to thousands of employees. But a lot of times you will see some of these businesses get scooped up by private equity. And then you always wonder, like, how did that dude? How is this person the CEO? How is the CTO like 27 and ain't did nothing yet? Mm-hmm. So a lot of what's happening. And if you look over at our rundown, what I wrote here on the right, I'm not going to read all of that, but a lot of times what is happening, it is someone's son or nephew or son-in-law, soon to be son-in-law, someone's daughter, someone's niece that is, you know, it's been working, you know, in the family business. Okay. Now it's your turn to go run something. It's your turn to go be in the C-suite. So you go buy this company. You have to, and a lot of times what ends up happening when these companies get bought, a whole new executive team gets implemented in.
Right.
And let's just
not to
say.
Cut you off. Real quick, there's a good show called Riches.
Yes.
I think it's on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of does kind of like the same thing.
It does exactly this.
That. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's exactly what this is. But this show is basically what happens a lot of times in real life. So you see, it's like, oh, that's how the Jared Kushners get into these powerful roles in companies. What have you done to actually do this? It's like you're Nothing. Thinking like you went out and you started a company. It's like, no, your uncle, you know, private equity firm bought a company and installed you as the CFO. That happens a lot. So what I took was like Melody Hobson. She's saying, okay, let's just do that, but let's do it with folks who look like me.
And like I said, I get it. I'm not mad at that at all, but it just, it sounds like they're doing that and then they're expecting the benefit to sort of trickle down to the rest of Black people. And I just don't see how this benefits anybody past those people that make it into the C-suite, the people that get the benefit of being minoritized at these companies. Like, I don't really see how it gets past that and actually benefits the larger community as a whole.
Right. So what I'm reading here is they kind of mentioned that, I'll paraphrase, companies with 100 million to a billion in revenue. And what they plan on doing is move these companies. I don't know what move means. Does that mean direct? Does that mean suggest? Does that mean advise?
Well, they're going to acquire those companies
to spend between $8 billion and $100 billion with Black and Latino suppliers, resulting in a significant increase in jobs for minorities. Again, that all based on.
And that's the key. Like, they can suggest all day long.
Right.
They can. But is this really going to funnel down to, you know, average Joe with the shop on a corner? Like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Right. One of the things that this was saying was that when you do have a lot of these Black owned suppliers that are basically the self built or, you know, the bootstrapped, mm-hmm. they just don't get large enough to deal with Target, to deal with Walmart. They simply don't. So her idea is, well, let me go buy a company that is big enough to deal with Walmart. And when I install my team, I am installing Black folks and Latino folks, at the top. And let's hope that they will actually, push it forward, move it forward.
They'll keep it forward.
That they'll keep doing those kind of things. It is an interesting concept. Because I don't know that anyone's ever done it before.
No, it is definitely so, very innovative and creative and she, I mean, if it works.
She don't have a lot of misses.
No, she does not. Look, if anybody could do it, a sister could do it. I'm just saying. And I'm not mad. I would just I get it, but then I kind of, I don't know.
Like, I'm pretty sure in the middle, I'm pretty sure the money will trade hands enough to where people will benefit off of this in addition to the money actually being spent for the ultimate goal of trying to create minority owned businesses or convince these companies to spend money with black owned businesses. I'm pretty sure in the process of that.
So
there are some people that's going to get paid and it's going to be everybody wins.
Right. So things that we know are true. Black and brown folks spend money with black and brown folks. When the opportunities present themselves to, not necessarily trying to hook anybody up, but you're just not averse to it because it's not saying I'm going to go out of my way to support this black owned company. It's just that, no, this is just a black company that can do what I need them to do. And I'm not going out of my way to not give them any business. So if we factor that into this, it'll be an interesting play if this works, but this is not a short game. This is a longer term game. I think that she's playing.
And let me just read real quick what they've already been able to do. So Project Black made its first investment last year, acquiring 52.5% of Utah-based Sorensen Communications from other private equity investors at an enterprise value of $1.3 billion. The two-decade-old company with $837 million in sales at the end of September 2021 is a leader in services for the deaf and hard of hearing, providing everything from phone call captioning to sign language interpreters. So what they did was so Project Black acquired Sorensen. Mm-hmm. And then what they did was install a new CEO, Jorge mm-hmm. Rodriguez, a 53-year-old telecom veteran who previously ran subsidiaries for Mexican billionaire, blah, 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 blah. And then in less than 12 months, the company has gone from one person of color to 13 across its C-suite and boardroom. Sorensen is adding Spanish language services and has agreed to acquire 70% of CQ Fluency, a minority-owned business with annual revenue of $45 million that provides translation services to health insurers, including Cigna, Aetna, and the United Group. So over the next 3 years, Project Black plans to similarly buy, minoritize, and expand companies in 6 to 10 other areas where it seems room for growth. So, like I said, they're doing it. They're definitely doing it. You go from 1 to 13 that in a year, that's not trivial. As far as like C-suite and boardroom, executives go. And then the idea that they acquired this other smaller, company that will now be able to be a part of the mix or whatever. I get it. However, to your point, Rob, about the idea that when we think of small business, we think of the mom and pop shop on the corner with three employees. And that's not necessarily the case. Obviously in this case, the small business made $45 million that just got acquired by this larger company. And that's great for all of them, but that is
Because they got paid.
Because they all got paid, but that's still such a very small subset of black and brown businesses in this country. So I still just don't see how it goes past that. Like, how does that filter down into anything else that black folks is doing in the hood? You know what I mean? And in the community. I don't know. I don't see it. Just maybe some rich folks getting richer and black folks get to be some of those rich folks now getting richer and the rest of us still out here struggling.
So I added this to my Google News. So anytime something comes up, oh, let's go take a look and see what's happening. Because as I said, mm-hmm. I think that this is a longer play. This is not the quick game of checkers. This is a much, much longer play, for this to all work out. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this one works out.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So y'all, do y'all remember back in 2021, end of 2021, beginning of 2022, Joe Rogan got into a little bit of trouble. He was saying, you know, saying N-word all kind of ways.
Rub Joe Rogan from my brain as often as I can.
Well, let's just talk. Let's just think about it for a little bit today and talk about it. So essentially, he is very liberal with his use. At least let's just say, let me be correct. At one point, he was very liberal with his use of the N-word. And I think it was India Irie who actually posted a Instagram video of this dude basically 24 times on his actual show. This is not him and his boys, you know, in the car on the way to the studio. This is after the cameras have started rolling and it's just rolling off his mouth, you know, out of his mouth, like with, you know, like he just don't care about it. So long story short, Spotify decided not to pull Joe Rogan. He's their $100 million man. They decided we're going to keep rolling with him. They ended up pulling about 70 of his shows, but specifically Spotify CEO Daniel Ek said, "I do not believe that silencing Joe is the answer. Canceling voices is a slippery slope." Ek also said that he was committing an incremental investment of $100 million for the licensing, development, marketing of music, artists and songwriters and audio content from historically marginalized groups. You fast forward to today, 14 months later, Spotify has spent less than 10% of the money that they said they were going to, you know, that they pledged on its creator equity fund. The initiative is behind schedule in hiring the 8-person staff. So it's like they're not even saying that we hired them and then we done laid off with the other layoffs, the 8-person staff. They ain't ever hired them in the first place. And, so they're, you know, so this fund is now suffering from shifting priorities. And
well, he said incremental, less than 10%. Is an increment.
It's an increment, right. He say what kind of increment? He's just an increment. So, I mean, they do this kind of shit all the time. Let's just, you know, keep it a bean. It was a symbolic gesture to get black folks not to leave Spotify.
It's very interesting that you say symbolic gesture, because I went back and listened to one of our episodes. Actually a couple of our episodes trying to find where we talked about this, because I remember talking about it and I remember this actual quote. And Terrence, you said, I bet you this ain't nothing more than a symbolic gesture, because we getting kind of far removed from George Floyd. So this ain't George Floyd. This is Joe Rogan. And when that stuff blows over, it's going to be out.
Spotify ain't no different than everybody else. And to finish your thought on the fact that they haven't done anything and being behind in scheduling, at the beginning of the year, the fund had not completed its 2023 budget and had not determined its priority projects, according to a memo. And another fund intended to promote diversity in podcasts suffered after that business was hit by layoffs. So it's like y'all really was trying to sabotage this from jump so that you could point to it and say, we tried and it didn't work. See, we couldn't even get the budget together. And so it's just like, exactly. I never expected much from this, and yet they lived down to my expectations, you know, as expected.
So when we talk about this kind of stuff, and this came up last week, I think it was our last story last week. And it's like, why do we got to make everything about race? Well, we ain't making it about race. It's about it. It's just the way that it is sometimes. Why do we keep bringing these things up? And, or why are you poo-pooing this before it even happens? It's like, you guys haven't even given an opportunity to get kicked off yet. And you're already talking negatively about it. And it just reminds me, I've actually been, you know, going back and reading, a lot of James Baldwin lately. And I hope I don't mess this quote up, but one of his more famous quotes, he says, "I cannot believe what you say because I see what you do." So when we talk about some of these stories, and it's like, it sounds like it's going to be good. It sounds like it's going to be, wow, this is really something that's going to be cool for, you know, for the tech industry, particularly how it's going to affect Black and brown folks. And we say it, and it's like, it sounds nice, but. However, when we lean back and we lean over to the side and we're, you know, because we've seen this before, you know, we've heard this song and dance before. And it's like, here it is. It's like, you know, you had some heat because you was going to stick with the $100 million dude that was, you know, you had to pull 70 of his shows down because of his use of language that, your listeners don't like. And okay, well, let's give $100 million to people who he was offending.
Let's pledge.
$100 million.
And that wasn't even. And the bad part is that wasn't even a lot of money. You know what I mean? They paid Joe Rogan more than that. You know what I mean? It turns out, his deal's worth like $200 million. So it's just like, that money was a drop in the bucket, and y'all didn't even try. I mean, just from the jump, it says the streaming service lacked a well-structured, clear system for vetting and approving projects or allocating money. Ideas were pitched, but not often accepted. So y'all just never had any intention of trying to make this work in good faith. There was never any good faith effort to try to make this work. So it's just kind of like, I mean, I don't rock with Spotify like that anyway. So, I mean, forget y'all.
I'm not picking on University of Vermont. It is a fine institution. But if you say, you know what, we did everything we could do to try to find Black professionals that are coming out of the University of Vermont, then you're going to, it's kind of like you plan to fail.
Right.
The state has like, I think about 1%, and the university is like 0.8% African Americans there. So if that's where you're going to look for people, what do you think you're going to find? This is a true story. My oldest daughter, when she was thinking about grad schools, they have a very, very good educational program at the University of Vermont. And she was talking to one of the Black, faculty. She talked to a Black faculty person. I don't want to say the, but it was like she talked to a Black faculty person, but there was not a whole lot.
Probably the only one.
And they talked to, you know, an actual Black grad student. And this is what got her, because everything was sounding really good. This is one of the best programs in the country. It's like, but you might have to go to Montreal to get your hair done. She's like, well, I got to leave the country. Never mind. It's like, well, Montreal is a little closer. You can get there. It's easier to get there if you got a passport than going to Boston. And she's like, Vermont and Boston ain't close. Right. You know what I'm saying?
That's the next place to get your hair done.
Exactly. So, but if that's where you're going to look for us, then you're going to probably have some problems as compared to going to FAMU or NCAT or Tennessee State or wherever. So I just look at this as like, as you were saying, it's like, you know, Terrence, it's like, y'all put this together to fail. It's like you cannot convince me that you couldn't go find some black artist. So it's like, let alone the podcasting part of it, just, which is what we really are into. You mean to tell me you couldn't find some black artists that are singing and making music? You know, you were struggling to actually find people to invest in. Come on.
Well, it sounds like they didn't beyond even not being able to find anybody to invest in. It sounds like they did not invest and be intentional about putting together the team that was supposed to make this thing work. Yeah. They didn't even get their employees together. And I'm sure there were probably black employees lined up saying, we would love to, you know, make up this team and be a part of this team and take this project on. If you given us $100 million, you know, we can go do something great with this money. But y'all didn't even try to do that, to even get to the point where people could pitch and creators could benefit from this money. So it's just like, miss me with this Spotify, y'all whack.
So yeah. So Spotify, when we look at your programs and stuff side-eyed, it's like, well, we can't believe what you say because we see what you do. And that is not me. That is James Baldwin, but it's a heck of a quote. It's a heck of a quote. Let's get into this next story, y'all. So my question is it too early to start calling Twitter just can't get right? Because it turns out that at least part of Twitter source code has been publicly available on GitHub for months. You know, it didn't go up and they figured it out and then they pulled it right down. They say they don't know how long it's been available, but it's definitely been several months. I'm reading here. We're not exactly sure how long the code has been in the open, but GitHub did respond to a copyright claim and removed the code last Friday. So ultimately, GitHub got a claim from Twitter. You need to take this copyright stuff down. They immediately did that. But here's what I would expect Twitter to do. Well, who posted the code? Completely right. Expect that. Here's also what I would expect Twitter to do. Who downloaded the code? But the question that I have is that is the U.S. District Court of the Northern District, are they going to actually, rule that not only the person who put it up, we need you to disclose to us who actually went out and downloaded this code. That's problematic for me, but I don't know that it's illegal.
Doesn't this start creeping into TikTok territory? Like the same issue we're talking about TikTok for right now. The fact that China could subpoena or demand information from that mm-hmm. platform. Ain't this the same thing? Am I tripping? Or is this the same thing?
Well, the way TikTok is saying it is like this. People can't see me online, but I'm doing my hands vertically out. The way they're saying it is like this. So that's what makes it different. It's the same words. It's just the hand gestures was different. I think so, Stephanie. It's like I've kind of wondered. It's like, wait a minute. So Twitter was definitely violated by somebody posting their source code. That is absolutely that is absolutely a breach. And if someone committed the crime of posting that up, then I can see why you would go to GitHub and say, who actually did this? Can you give us information on who committed this crime? But it's kind of like,
compel them to tell you. You need to go back to Twitter and start your little investigation there and start interviewing old employees and try to get somebody to snitch on somebody else and all of that. But law enforcement should not be able to compel GitHub to turn over information about who downloaded what, when, and whatever. They should not be able to do that because literally that's exactly the same thing that we are
scared.
Right now.
we said this last week about TikTok. Okay, you're putting all this stuff in Oracle data center in Texas. You're doing all these things. What about when Beijing says, but I want the data? What do you do then? Because that's what's happening right now. Twitter is, or at least they're going to the court and they're saying, we want to know not only who put it up, we want to know who downloaded it. And I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on a podcast, but I'm just wondering if someone posts some code to an open source thing to where you can go and you can look at the code and you can view the code. Is it a crime for you to download code that is posted? The crime to me
on a public open source website.
Exactly. It has been there for months. It's like, Twitter doesn't need to know who I am because I downloaded some code that, as far as I was concerned, was completely legal. Like that's where it's like,
how would I know that code wasn't, how would I know that code was stolen if it's on an open source website?
Right.
You know, I'm just going to look at it. Now, the rest of the thread of that now is, wait a minute, I think I just lost my train of thought.
Were you going to say, as far as I'm concerned, everybody who downloaded it was a journalist? that's what I'm saying. It's like, we can't give you that information. Everyone who downloaded it just happens to be a journalist.
But also, I could see where, because, you know, and we're going to talk about this when we get to TikTok, part of what the Restrict Act is trying to do is repeal Section 230 of the Federal Communications Commission Act that says that platforms cannot be held responsible for the content on their platform. If that were to happen, then GitHub would be under fire and be subject to all kind of fines and legal liabilities that would probably compel them to turn this over. So, you know, like I said, when we get to talking about that, like it's all tied up in together. It's all, it's all together. And we are in a bad place on a super slippery slope right now as it relates to, you know, our lives, our on the internet, our digital lives.
Yeah. This one, like I said, it's I can't fault Twitter for asking of the court, because Twitter's going to do what Twitter's going to do. But it's like, court, are you really going to allow this company to subpoena this other company, this right. this other organization to find out who just went and read the stuff? Mm-hmm. And I can't remember where I saw this. Like, well, it's kind of like, you know, there was a book that was in the library that shouldn't have been in the library. And now you want to know who all read the book in the library. Like, why are you worried about who read the book and not worried about who actually put the book in the library? It's like, seems right. to me like you worried about the wrong thing. Number one, why are you not worried about who stole the information out of, you know, like you said it exactly right. Start your investigation in your house where the stuff was stole instead of worrying about who actually read it after the fact. Right. But like I said, I fully expect Twitter asks for everything they can ask for, but I'm really interested to see what the U.S. District Court of the Northern District ultimately does in California on this, because this is what I want to pay attention to. Are you going to actually say, yeah, here's who got it, and here's all the people who read it? Because my gut would tell me, I'm just trying to think this out. If I know I just hacked Twitter and got their code and posted to GitHub, you ain't going to find out who I am. But there could be some regular people. Oh, this is really interesting. You know, some really interesting code. Excuse me. Let me go take a look at it. And they might actually be registered as who they are. So my concern now is for the people who just unwittingly downloaded this information. They're not necessarily doing anything nefarious with it, but they just went and they just looked at this code. Why are you worried about who they are?
Well, let's keep it a buck. These people knew what they were doing when they're trying to download the source code for Twitter. So hopefully they made sure that similarly as the person who uploaded it, tried to protect themselves or whatever the case they did to try to anonymize themselves. I'm pretty sure the downloaders.
Would it have even been that obvious? Like if they didn't title it TikTok source code, like would it have even been that code. Obvious that that's what it was? You may have just been looking for searching on, you know, an algorithm to do X, Y, and Z, and maybe it got tagged in those kind of in that way, and you didn't even know what you were looking at. I mean, you know, I don't know what TikTok source code looks like. If there are variable names in there that are you know, tweet and blue and all the rest of that, but like you might not have even known. And you were just looking for code.
So keeping on with Twitter, y'all. Stephanie, I have to ask you a question.
I'm not doing it.
I got to ask, though, because, you know, America or not. You know what? We're not just in America. We are listened to on Earth. So Earth may not know what you're not going to do. So I still got to ask the question. Twitter Blue for verified folks. Who were notable, who have done, you know, clearly you are a notable person, that has contributed publicly to, you know, to public discourse. So you are able to get yourself verified on Twitter, not Twitter Blue, the old school Twitter verification. Well, your boy Elon said, nah, that ends Saturday.
I'm gonna lose my check.
You upset?
I mean, yeah, no, I'm like, it sucks, but I'm gonna give up I'm not paying for Twitter Blue. That let's just preface all of this. I'm not paying. I don't use Twitter. Number one, I don't even use Twitter enough to justify yet another monthly subscription that I'm paying for, because I'm paying for 1,000 of them. So even $9 is too much for a service that I don't use regularly. And I mean, I'm gonna just give up the check. Like, it is what it is. I'm giving it up.
Now, we all said that we had no intention on ever paying for Twitter Blue. I think I said on this show that I actually am Twitter Blue certified now. So I actually have it. But in my defense, y'all, it was gifted to me. I know we talked about it before, but folks are saying, I thought you said you were never going to get it. It's like, these are friends of mine. I thought you said you were never going to get this. I said I was never going to pay for it. Somebody pay for it for me. So I'm checking it out. But, you know, just on Twitter, because Twitter probably for me is now my primary, social media platform. Just for the type of stuff that I talk about that I'm into. it's still Twitter. So there's some trashiness to it, but there is a community of folks that I am dealing with on Twitter. So, and I've always said this, I really never had an intention on like getting rid of my Twitter account. Like with some folks were, you know, were actually, you know, not talking about it. Some folks actually did it. They have completely left Twitter. I was never really in that camp because there's people who I like on Twitter that I was talking to and they were talking to me. And that's kind of where we do what we do. That being said, one of those folks say, well, is Twitter Blue worth it? And I'm being honest. I don't see what the benefit is of it. I truly am not noticing anything different other than I do believe that when I am, responding or if I am replying to someone, you know, to someone's tweet, if I'm actually leaving a comment or something like that, if, chronologically, I might appear above other people because I have the blue checkbox. The blue check mark as compared to just everything being absolutely chronological. And even then it only kind of works because if you are replying to someone else's reply, it's going to stick it down under them. But if you're just replying to like the original thread and it's not in the context of the entire conversation, then you might pop up in front of 20 other people who don't have that blue check box.
That's not worth $9 a month.
I don't think that's worth, you know, the $84 a year.
Listen, man. There are some people who are very, very vain and need that thing that says I am important. And there are people who say, oh, so the difference between regular and important is paying $8 a month on Twitter. There are some people who are going to cough up that money. Now, the question is there enough of those people that will make it worthwhile for Twitter to have all these extra features that come along with it or not? Question remains, but I know there's a nice amount of people who says, you know what? I need to do whatever it's going to take to set myself apart. And if that means $8 a month, I think
what Musk was banking on was all of the people who already had blue checks not wanting to lose them. Gotcha. And I don't think that's going to be the flex he thinks it is. Cause mm-hmm. like I know, you know, just anecdotally, I don't know if y'all know who Lovey is.
Mm-hmm. Lovey Ajayi?
She's mm-hmm. like, take the check. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need this check. And I'm in that same camp. My identity is not so tied up in some little blue icon that now I'm going to be like, oh my God, I can't lose my check. Let me go ahead and sign. Like, and I really think, you know, there probably will be some people, to your point, Terrence, whose identity is so wrapped up in that idea that they don't want to lose that thing. But I'm not one of them. And I don't know that it's going to be enough of those originally verified people that come over to the other side, basically, to justify him kicking all of us, getting rid of all of us, you know, all of our checks or whatever. So it is, it kind of is what it is. I don't know. I'm, like I said, I'm going to lose it and I'm okay with it. And, you know, at this point, I don't even know what else to say. It is what it is.
I think that Twitter needs to be very careful with making a second class citizen, type category on Twitter, because that's how Elon is pushing it. If you get Twitter checkmark, you're cool. I'm with you. If you don't, or Twitter Blue, I should say, if you don't, you now are some kind of second class citizen on Twitter. The flex that he's trying is that, oh, well, this is going to suck enough for enough people that they're going to actually buy this blue check mark. Nah, what folks is going to do is like, is MySpace still going? Let me go hop over there and see if it's still cool.
Exactly.
Is Lime still out there? Let me go holler and see what's going on over there. This literally happened. Somebody asked me to, you know, go check Clubhouse out again. I don't think I've touched anything on Clubhouse probably in well over a year, probably pushing more like 18 months, but it's like, it's still there. But if Twitter was like saying, you know, well, you can only use Twitter Spaces if you have a blue check mark, it's like, I guarantee you the Clubhouse will be popping within minutes of that announcement coming out
again. Yes.
So I think that they got to be careful with this, because if you make it like, you know, a second class citizen doesn't just give you money to not be a second class citizen. They just go somewhere where they can be a first class citizen. They go somewhere else. And
you said, I can't believe you said careful in the same emphasis as something owned by Elon Musk.
So
I just want to shout out real quick. Ashia made a comment about paying for Meta certified through with Facebook and IG. They have another type of program, but they actually do offer some benefits, like you get expedited customer service, like you get to talk to a real person if you need customer service, and some other like little front of the line kind of VIP behind the velvet rope type benefits. I wouldn't pay for that either. No. Well,
but you know what?
If you want to take my blue check on Instagram, take the check. Like I just don't care enough.
Here's where I see that actually being a benefit though, because I have, you know, there was a time when I was actually spending a lot of time inside of Facebook, building Facebook ads, doing Facebook campaigns and stuff like that. I would have paid money to be able to get to support person. As compared to not be, you know, be able to get to one. The only thing you were able to do before was like, I can go pay this agency who knows somebody who can, you know, try to figure this thing out. But if I could actually pay for, you know, as a marketer on Facebook, if I could pay for an account and that's going to get me like expedited customer service and get me some other tools that I wouldn't necessarily have unless I paid for it, that is actually something that I can see the benefit in that because of what I was doing.
On top of already paying for ads, huh?
Right.
The paying for the ads wasn't enough, huh?
Just trust me. I tell you, I would have paid money to be able to call someone to figure out why is this ad that was approved last week not approved this week and nothing changing right. that. I would have right. paid to be able to try to talk to somebody to figure that out as compared to not making the money over the 3 weeks it took me to figure it out on my own.
And but now you're Meta, go ahead, Stephanie.
No, I'm saying Meta is saying that paying for Meta Certified will not get you any increased exposure mm-hmm. to your audience. So that was what a lot of people were like, well, if I'm gonna pay, you know, is this basically like boosting all of my posts so that my reach now grows? They're saying that that's not going to happen, but I can absolutely see that coming into play on across all social media where, you know, it's basically, it becomes just this pay to play type of situation.
Oh, and Facebook said, we've already mastered that Facebook ads. You want to pay money to actually get your stuff boosted, to pay money to get your stuff in front of folks. Just pay us how you already do it. This is just so that when them ads ain't working, you can get to us first. And but I'm not saying that's what it is, but if Rob, it were, even, I could see it.
But that's Rob. That's even you are making up a, not making up. You are coming up with a scenario for you specifically could see the value in Meta Certified. You don't even know for sure if paying for Meta Certified can guarantee that you're going to get support for ads. You're just saying,
right.
I could
you're
see
right.
where
yeah, you're
if
right.
I needed help with ads. We don't even know what this right. expedited support means. That could just mean you talking to somebody. Now, what they know, who knows, right? You would think they would know about ads. You would think they would know about, hey, help me unlock my account. That just means you talking to somebody. That don't mean they gonna actually help you.
It's a cash grab that I just don't think it's gonna work for any of these platforms. I don't know.
The concern for a lot of folks is that Elon Musk and his personality is like, you gonna give me money or bunk you. I could really care less what you do on my platform. And like I said, that you know, he may think that's a flex, but you know, history has shown us that when you make people second class citizens, they don't pay to become first class. They just move someplace else to where it's better. Generally,
you know, going to use social media as a tool to direct traffic to my own online properties, and do it that way. Anybody out here who is depending on the kindness,
of any
social media platform, you know, and the well intentions of a social media platform for your livelihood, it's just not a good look.
I literally had this conversation yesterday with someone. I am no longer trying to push anyone to any social media platform. I'll let you know that I'm on it. But if I'm going to push you to something, if I'm going to get you to go somewhere else, that else is going to be something that is mine. That is going to be my community, my Discord, my email, you know, you subscribe to my email newsletter, you know, to my website, to, you know, to my membership program, something that I actually am controlling. Understanding that the number of people that might actually sign up for that would be far less, but they would be far more valuable to me because they're rocking with me, not just you just happen to be on some other social media platform. Right. So I'm not
double tapping my selfies.
Exactly. So I'm not, you know, I'm not poo-pooing other social media platforms. But I have no desire. Hey, you know, I remember when Clubhouse was hot. Hey, you got to go get on this thing, Clubhouse. And I mean, I did, cause like, okay, this is what Earth is talking about. Let me go see what this thing is about. But I'm like, why am I trying to push you to something else that I don't own to where now I got to play with the algorithm, try to talk to you when I could just say, instead of going to Clubhouse, why not just go to my Discord? Why not just go to my podcast? Why not just go to my email newsletter? I could talk to you there.
And we can move on, but then I think the onus goes back to us, right? Because the reason why people was trying to get people over on Clubhouse, because Clubhouse is new. And if you get over there first, you get all the riches of being first.
Right.
It was now the shiny new thing.
Now that everybody's on Clubhouse, nobody's on Clubhouse because I'm not special no more as being one of them first people to create whatever Clubhouse is doing at that time. So now nobody cares about Clubhouse.
And I'm sure all the celebrities that were there that were really the motivation for everybody else to follow are not there anymore. Like they were there and everybody felt like I was in the room with Oprah. I'm like, but were you? Really?
Yeah.
Did you talk to her? Like, come on. So
that goes back to, like I mentioned, that goes back to an onus on us to where if you're going to work that hard, like, you know, just re-emphasizing what Rob said, if you're going to work that hard to try to get first on Clubhouse or first on Mastodon or first on whatever else new thing that pops up, you should just work that hard on building up your own property. So therefore you ain't got to chase the wild goose, you know, the golden goose egg. Don't even worry about it.
We want to have to, cause this was a Twitter story and we making it all about everything else. So at some point we're going to have to talk about fan base and what Isaac Hayes III is doing over there.
Listen, we're going to get him on. He has agreed to come on the show previously. The communication kind of broke down. I definitely didn't continue to hound and stalk him. But we're going to get him on the show, like ASAP. We're going to get him on a show.
All right. Cause like what he is doing with fan base,
I'm a DM him right now.
What he's doing with fan base is interesting. And
that's
it's blowing
what I'm
up.
Saying.
And it's like,
and
you
it's
know.
Like, make your own money. Like forget you. It's, yeah.
But
even still, the onus has got to be on us to go there.
Yes.
Right. Everybody's on Twitter, even though we hate Elon, because everybody's on Twitter. Same thing with Instagram. Same thing with TikTok. Same thing with Facebook to a lesser extent. You know, there's somebody's going to have to fall on that sword. Somebody's going to have to be the trailblazer. Some folks are going to have to get over there and stake their claim, you know, because if we don't, we just going to have to be on the Tech John every Monday talking about how Twitter's whack when we could be doing something else.
So we're going to keep it in the, you know, in the social media realm for this last story. And Steph, I'm happy that you put this in there because I was busy last week and I forgot right fast that, TikTok had a hearing in front of Congress. So I went and started looking at some of these clips, read some of these articles, and you know, and I definitely want to get y'all's take on this, but Congress seemed way more prepared for this conversation than I think the CEO of TikTok was prepared to have it. This was not when they were talking about tubes and pipes. And you were talking to octogenarians who literally had never been on a platform before. I'm not saying that every one of the Congress people who spoke has ever been on TikTok, but they were prepared well by their staffs who probably have been. So I wanted to get your take on these hearings because it's very rare that we actually get to see both sides of Congress kind of having the same idea and not liking something or liking something. And in this case, Congress, period. It ain't about the right or the left. Congress is not really happy with what's going on with TikTok. I want to get y'all's take on what happened in these hearings last week.
Well, it's like, It all seems very disingenuous to me, because this company is not doing anything out of the ordinary of any other social media platform out there. Now, I get it. The only difference is that it is a Chinese based company, like the company's based in China. But other than that, and I don't know, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not a scholar in international foreign policy or anything like that. So I don't know if that alone, that fact alone, is enough to justify what they are putting this company through. It may be, in national security circles, China's threat through software is so great that we do have to try to figure out how to keep this app from infiltrating our country and all the rest of that, maybe. But that literally is the only difference between TikTok and every other social media platform out there, is the fact that the company is based in China. Because everything else, literally every single other thing else that they had an issue with as it relates to TikTok, they should have an issue with as it relates to Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat,
Twitter,
YouTube, like all of them, Twitter, all of them. You know what I mean? And so the idea that you're piling on, you know, this particular app, it just feels disingenuous and hypocritical to me.
So I think these congressmen feel like the ability or the potential for China to some way, directly or indirectly, have access to U.S. data, knowing what we know about how said data was used and manipulated in previous elections, specifically Cambridge Analytica, and how they sold that data or gave that data to these Russian whatevers. And they were able to use that data to somehow, some way, I don't know if it was greatly or marginally, either way, they were able to use that data to influence the political campaign / elections of the previous cycle, right? I think they're trying to use that as the, all right, remember what happened with Cambridge Analytica and Russia. What we don't want to happen is not, and this is what I'm thinking they're thinking, right?
Right.
They're thinking that, okay, well, let's try to be preemptive about TikTok and let me finish. What they're trying to do is preemptively say, all right, well, we ain't going to make the same mistake twice. So let's pile on. Like you mentioned, I'm not disagreeing at all. Yeah. Pile on TikTok to make sure this don't happen the same thing in China. In addition to that, what I also think they're trying to do is we need to send a message to China, because if China's thinking about, and this is indirect, this is, I'm not saying it's directly related, this is just my conspiracy theory hat. What they're saying is, what we also need to do is we need to send a message to China that we ain't playing, because, you know, there's talks about China some way helping out Russia against Ukraine. So they're like, all right, what we need to do is we need to go ahead and show China that we ain't playing, you know, so we can kind of send a message to let China know it ain't going to be the same way. And especially if you're trying to help Russia. So we need to go ahead and had the shot across the bow thing. And I think just TikTok is just collateral damage.
Nah, honestly, I don't think this has anything to do with China, to be perfectly honest. I really don't. Where was all this preemptiveness in 2017 and 2018 and 2019 and 2020 and 20? Now, all of a sudden, 2023 is China, China, China. I honestly think Meta is.
So that's your experience.
Yeah, I think Meta's behind this. I think Meta fed those questions to all of those Congress people.
Okay.
I think Meta's lobbying dollars are, their lobbying game is strong AF. And I think they're trying to get rid of TikTok. I think China's a convenient scapegoat.
So China's collateral damage.
I think, and like I said, you know, without any foreign policy background, I'm sure there is some level of suspicion and guarding against foreign intelligence and all that needs to happen vis-a-vis China. But at the end of the day, like I said, this is happening already far too much with the other companies for it to just be about China. Gotcha. I think Meta is just like, we need to figure out a way to get rid of TikTok because they're crushing us. And this is a good way to do it.
I think that this is about China to a great extent. And here's why. When you think about all the stuff that Facebook is doing and it has been caught doing multiple times, you know, with the, you know, from Cambridge Analytica all the way up to, I can't think of her name, but, it was the former, Facebook employee.
Sheryl Sandberg.
Exactly. No,
you're talking about the whistleblower.
The whistleblower.
Taugen.
Yes. So all the stuff that's going on at Facebook. Yes. This is bad. It's horrible. But at the end of the day, Facebook is still our mess. TikTok is another country's mess. And I don't want to say that like China is our enemy, but they sure enough are our adversary. We ain't friends like that. And as Terrence was saying, we're coming off of this Cambridge Analytica stuff. We're coming off of where it's not they have the ability to do this. They use the ability to sway an election. We're going to take all this information. Say we're going to take all this information that we have. And we know that if we push this post, if we can get people to like this, we can get them into basically our echo chambers, and we can just keep inundating them with, you know, with this messaging and this and that and the other, that we could literally maybe move something a percentage point or two or three or four or whatever the case is. And that scares us. That gets us into Manchurian candidate kind of stuff.
I'm gonna just interrupt you real quick because she had just made a great point. You don't think they're already doing that?
Oh, I absolutely think they're doing that. But on
our platforms, you talk about this is China's mess and we have our own mess, but China and every other country in the world is already influencing, U.S. thought and persuading things through ads on our own platform.
I do believe that is because China's an easy mark. Because it's a country, we have not said the name ByteDance one time. So we've been talking about this. ByteDance is the company that owns TikTok and runs TikTok. We keep talking about China. Why? Because ByteDance is based in Beijing. And although it is an autonomous company, companies that are based in Beijing, they just run different because the government there, I understand that you have this. I want that data. Go ahead and get it for me. Well, they're going to find out.
But how
is that our problem? But the issue is that it's harder to do this. You're going to have the left and the right fighting over. You can't shut down an American based company. You can't shut down Twitter. You can't shut down Facebook. But when it comes to ByteDance, we can say, you know what? That's China's company. We can ban that. We can get rid of that. So I think that that's just where the difference comes in for me. And as I said, as I'm going and I'm listening to how these folks are talking about it, the government is not happy at all with what, you know, with what TikTok is doing. As I said, it's
like Stephanie kind of mentioned, they may not even be mad at TikTok at all. I think it's just TikTok is just collateral damage for whatever the politicians are trying to get cool points against, whether it be looking tough against China, whether that be looking tough against data in the eyes of people who are concerned about this. It seems like, and this kind of leans into what Rob was saying. TikTok is an easy target because it's not a U.S. company.
Right.
So these congressional hearings and these politicians can feel like, we can move this, whether it works out in our benefit or just blows up in their face. The fact that they can say we cared,
doing the work of putting into place.
That's too easy.
Yeah. Instead of actually doing the work of putting into place something similar to GDPR, or instead of actually mandating
doing work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of actually mandating digital and media literacy education in schools, instead of doing the actual work, let's make TikTok the boogeyman.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Keep people distracted. And Meta sitting here pumping money into all of it, saying, "Yeah, make TikTok the boogeyman." You know what I mean? It's just it's nonsense to me. It really is nonsense, because at the end of the day, you probably can't do it anyway. You know what I mean? At the end of this will most likely be all for naught. The likelihood that you are taking away the livelihoods of 5 million businesses on that platform, taking away a platform that half the country is on right now, 150 million play. And trust me, I am not standing for TikTok at all. I'm just saying our government is being hella disingenuous in this performance art that they're doing.
Oh, it's actually
right
a performance,
now.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it just irks me because, you know, it dominates news cycles. It gets people all riled up. But at the end of the day, it does nothing.
Right. So good conversation. We not going to solve it on this show, but it is going to be really interesting. And I'll just leave it with this. Something has just popped up and it says DeSantis gives a fifth different answer against Ukraine. DeSantis gives a fifth different answer against Ukraine, because you know he basically came out and said, I really ain't worried about Ukraine. I'm paraphrasing, editorializing, but he came out and basically said, I really ain't worried about Ukraine like that. And I think that what a lot of these senators are definitely afraid of is like, okay, does ByteDance have the data to where they can start really pushing to our citizens that the America is pro Ukraine. We're not pro Russia. We are pro Ukraine. But can you start pushing to enough people who are making enough noise and you start to get the echo chamber to think of things that are, that the echo chamber is basically now saying that, wait a minute, you know, DeSantis is right. It's like, you know, I don't care about, you know, Ukraine. It's like, why are we worried about this? And why are we worried about that? I think that the government is truly concerned that with all the data that a TikTok has, that they could start doing those kind of things. Why are they worried about that? Because it's been done already. We've already seen this happen. And then as we've been saying, TikTok is the lowest hanging fruit of, you know, who to go after. Could Facebook do this? Yes. That's the data that they used the last time they did it. They used Facebook data, an American company. But the fact that there is a foreign company that is an adversary of ours that now has these kind of data metrics on citizens of the United States to where you can start swaying elections. I see, like I said, it takes threat to America to basically get, the Democrats and the Republicans on the same side of anything. And like I said, when I went and I looked at some of this stuff, it was not some of the ridiculous things that we see when Congress is talking to tech companies. They knew what they wanted, and they were on message, for the most part. And I do believe, like, if you're looking at, well, who came, if it's a debate, well, who came out ahead on the debate? Was it the CEO of TikTok or was it, you know, Congress? I think Congress looked a little better here because they were going at dude that did not necessarily answer questions in an effective way. So, like I said, this is definitely not going to be solved on this show, but it is interesting to see how this is going to go, because I am now putting in this TikTok thing into the categories like the government is for real on this. They are not messing around. In the back of my mind, I still think it's like, man, there ain't enough Democrats or Republicans. Definitely not enough Republicans is trying to shut down a business. They sound like they might on this one. So we will definitely keep paying attention to this and see how it goes in the future. But y'all, I'm looking at the clock here. We definitely are at we passed the top of the hour. So we went a little long this episode, but let's go ahead and start wrapping it up. So Tech Life Steph, why don't you tell the folks how they can get at us?
You can follow me all around the web at Tech Life Steph.
And you can follow me on the internets at Brother Tech. That's BROTHATECH.
And I am at Rob Dunwood on all the things. And we are also at The Tech John on all the things. And also, just one last thing. If you would like to become a patron and support The Tech John, head over to patreon.com/The Tech John. And we have multiple tiers over there, any one of which is going to get you access to our live stream. A couple will get you access to a ad-free RSS so that you don't have to listen to ads when you're listening to the show. And until we meet again in a week's time, peace.
Peace.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.